Once upon a midnight weary, artists of Iowa discovered something quite dreary. In a pandemic year, an evil villain is out to steal the holiday cheer.
No live entertainment? Get out! No way! I'll save it myself if I have to. I'll do it today.
Join Iowa Public Radio Studio 1 and XBK for The Holiday Special, an original musical for a pandemic year, at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. President-elect Biden says the U.S. will be ready to lead again on the global stage, turning the page on Donald Trump's America First nationalism. That's the focus this hour, how Biden's foreign policy will be a stark change from Trump's. My guests on this Politics Wednesday edition, two professors of political science with decades of foreign policy and international security expertise, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College and Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. Jim and Wayne, wonderful to have you on board.
Thanks, Ben.
Ben, it's great to be here, Ben.
Okay, we have a lot to get to. We'll see how much depth we get to, but let's fly over a lot of areas of foreign policy this hour. But before we do that, I would like to ask each of you in the broadest terms to give us your thoughts on the magnitude of foreign policy change that stands before the U.S. in a matter of, 40-some days when the new president is inaugurated. Wayne, would you start us off?
I think the biggest change will be a move toward much more multilateralism, working with other countries, working with international organizations, not doing single transactional deals, which has been the Trump administration, an attempt to try to work and cooperate, particularly with other democratic nations, but also to work multilaterally, even with Europe in dealing with China.
Yes, I think I agree entirely with what Wayne has laid out there. I think it really will be a step-level change in terms of the way the United States approaches foreign policy. And significantly, and I think importantly, foreign leaders will grab on to this new kind of approach that the Biden administration will embrace here. And I think that actually will strengthen the United States' degree of influence and its ability to get things done in this kind of collective fashion.
Okay, gentlemen, before we get to specific geographic areas of concern, let's talk a little bit about foreign policy concern includes the entire planet, climate change. President-elect Joe Biden has vowed an overhaul of U.S. energy and environment policy to fight climate change. His goal to bring the economy to net zero emissions by the year 2050. Jim, let's start off with you on this. What are the changes you see and how soon will they occur?
Well, I think within probably days of President Biden taking office, that he's going to probably issue an executive order or announce that the United States will be joining the Paris Accord. That, incidentally, is right now is celebrating its fifth anniversary of being in effect. And I think that will be important symbolically in terms of how the rest of the world sees the United States coming back in to join this kind of challenge that climate change produces for the international system. There are also some actions that he could take, but they will be of a longer realm, for example, to bring back the Clean Power Plan that the Trump administration has sought to, and actually has ended. This was a plan that the Obama administration put into place in terms of basically trying to get rid of coal-based electricity production here. So I think those would be some of the initial efforts, but also keep in mind that cities and states have already been engaging in efforts at climate change, and I think that he will encourage the continuance of those.
Okay. Wayne, to you, the new direction we're likely to see in the area of climate change under the new president.
Well, certainly Jim is off to a really good start on that. I think there'll be a lot of changes in terms of environmental regulations, which Trump has weakened greatly. For instance, I suspect that we will get much stronger fuel efficiency standards. I think we will get standards for methane emissions from fracking and other methane emissions. I noticed Trump weakened the soot regulations the other day. I think that will be undone. I think that the new administration, I think Biden is going to put a lot of emphasis on regulations because he can do a lot of this without getting the consent of the Senate, which is going to hold up other things that require large amounts of money.
Okay. Before we get to geographical hotspots, another one of these large issues, immigration policy. President Trump, he is pushed to crack down on illegal immigration and overhaul the legal immigration system, was at the heart of his campaign in 2016. And we know it remained at the forefront of his White House agenda during these nearly 4 years in office. In terms of immigration, Wayne, what can we expect from a Biden administration?
Well, I think we can expect a much more open immigration policy. Trump had eliminated immigration from a number of Muslim countries. I think that will end. I think that we will have strict border controls, but not rely on the wall. I think holding immigrants in other countries who are seeking asylum, that we will end that. I think we will see more efforts to send money to countries in Central America to prevent immigrants from immigrating to the United States. I do not think that we will separate families, which has been done in the Trump administration. I think it will take time for many of these things to happen, but I think there'll be very significant changes.
Mm-hmm. Jim, Wayne named a number of facets, so many different things that have changed in terms of immigration policy under President Trump. How easily will this be for President Biden to reverse or change direction here, just as an executive without Congress?
Well, I think he can do a number of these things through executive orders. For example, the travel ban could be immediately lifted by an executive order. He probably could instruct his head of in terms of immigration policy here, head of ICE and so on, head of Homeland Security, to issue different rules in terms of, say, asylum policy here would be an important way. He could direct by executive order the refugees, the number of refugees that the United States would accept. Currently it's at like 15,000. And he could enlarge that. He's talked about enlarging it to 125,000 here. So he could do some of these things by executive order or by having his cabinet members issue rules of how they would be applied in terms of, for example, most notably in terms of the asylum policy, the rules could be changed rather quickly there. And so many of these things can be done. For example, one of the things we ought to mention, too, and just happened, I think, within the past week or so and really was issued yesterday, is the DACA program is now up and running because the courts required that. And I noticed that the Trump administration just announced that they were going to begin to receive applications for that deferred action on childhood arrivals here, or the DACA program. So that has been done, actually, by the courts because someone appealed. So there are some ways to do this rather quickly. I suppose the biggest one that would take more time and actually will take some congressional action would be on the wall construction. Certainly there has been, something like 300 and some miles of wall have been put into place. under the Trump administration, but many and there's still wall construction going on, and many of those contracts have been let, and some of those and the court has actually approved the use of some military funding for that construction. So that would probably have to go back through the Congress to, maybe to cut those off.
Yeah, right. And that some, I think it's some 400 miles of wall under this administration has mostly been replacement of existing fencing so far. Biden's campaign website has called the wall, quote, a waste of money. He's vowed to halt construction. We'll watch what happens there. Quickly, before we go to break in 3 or 4 minutes, let's focus in on some geographic areas. The Middle East, an area of the globe that has bedeviled every modern president in more than a half a century, the Middle East. So many actors, so many competing concerns in the news recently. The killing of a prominent Iranian nuclear scientist, I think, by Israel's Mossad. Also reports that Donald Trump asking for options to strike on Iran's main nuclear site several weeks ago, but decided evidently against doing so. Wayne, start us off there with the Middle East, perhaps with Iran, because this president did a real about-face here, pulling out of the Iran nuclear agreement.
Well, I think Biden will want to get back into the nuclear agreement. The question is, what kinds of concessions will he get from the Iranians with, to allow him to do that? The Iranians have started to enrich uranium again. I think that would have to stop. They threatened to throw the inspectors out. That will have to stop. There are big issues in terms of Iran's missile production, in terms of their support for paramilitary forces in the Middle East. Will Biden be able to get any concessions in that regard? And there will be strong pressures against it. This new alliance between Israel and Saudi Arabia, I think there will be some problems in Washington as Biden attempts to get back into the Iranian deal.
Mm-hmm. Jim, pick up on Wayne's comments there about the Middle East and Iran and Israel.
Yeah, I think it will be difficult in the short term for the United States to get back into the Iran nuclear deal unless there is really some concessions. I mean, one of the complicating factors is that within Iran, there's an election coming up in June here, and I'm not sure how that actually will play if the Iranian government would make any concessions, say, on cutting back on, you know, they've gone over the limit under the Iran agreement in terms of the enrichment. They've apparently added some new faster centrifuges and so on. So I think it's going to be much more complicated and a much more longer-term operation here. And I think what we'll see is probably back to kind of the secret negotiations that really gave us the initial agreement back in 2013 and then the final agreement in 2015. And you have some of the same players. Jake Sullivan was involved, who's going to be the new national security advisor. He was involved in the original secret negotiations in Oman back in 2013 that eventually led to the 2015 agreement here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll probably see that kind of action rather than kind of the public movement immediately.
Okay.
Whether there will be concessions, I don't think the Biden administration will be in a position to get back in without incorporating maybe missile technology or some constraint on Iranian actions with regard to, say, Hezbollah or Hamas in the Middle East here.
Okay.
So I think there has to be a commitment there.
We'll take a short break and come back. We'll still stay on the Middle East very briefly. But, of course, we'll talk about President Trump presiding over a historic normalization agreement signed between some Arab states and Israel. Comment on that from Wayne and Jim when we come back. It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River. Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer on this Politics Wednesday edition of our program. We have two political scientists with really a vast amount of international foreign policy, international security expertise, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University and Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. We love to turn to Jim and Wayne for their dissection, so to speak, of what's going on in the world this hour. We are looking at what stands before U.S. policy in a matter of 40-some days, the switchover to the Biden administration, and how that foreign policy is likely to look different in many ways, a 180-degree turn on that. And when we stopped, we were talking about the Middle East. Let's finish up there. President Trump's Israel policy, criticized for measures that deeply favored the Israelis over Palestinians, for instance, such as moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. But President Trump also presiding over some historic normalization agreements signed between some Arab states and Israel. Jim, is this the start of something positive for the Middle East, something that the president can really chalk up as a success in a way? Of course, not for the Palestinians. Yeah,
it is a success, I think, in terms of getting these Arab states to recognize Israel and to really cooperate Israel. I think the explanation also has to include the fact that these states that were brought into this, if you will, sort of Israeli coalition, Bahrain, the UAE, and Sudan, they're concerned about the actions of Iran. So that it served, I think, as an important factor in moving them to this relationship. And as Wayne mentioned earlier, the relationship now, apparently the sort of ongoing relationship between Israel and Saudi Arabia, although sotto voce, not in a public view, also suggests the importance of Iran as a factor that filters into how this came about. I think this does leave the issue of the Palestinians and the whole issue of the West Bank, for example, and the Palestinian state sort of up in the air, and whether the Biden administration will want to try to re-energize those talks. I mean, certainly the Obama administration had considerable amount of failure in two different separate efforts by their envoys to try to revive those. I think that probably for the short term, the Biden administration may step back from that and let this play out with regard to Iran.
Okay. If we could, let's move on to Afghanistan. Weeks ago, we heard Donald Trump that he will sharply reduce the number of U.S. forces in Afghanistan from 4,500 to 2,500 by the middle of January, stopping short, though, of a threatened full withdrawal from this America's longest war. We heard from senior Republicans and Democrats that they fear this move will undermine security, hurt some fragile peace talks with the Taliban. Wayne, give us your thoughts on the future here of what will happen with America's longest war.
Well, reducing troops at exactly the same time that you're trying to bring the negotiations to a halt, I think is not a good idea because it doesn't strengthen your bargaining position. The fear that I would have is that if we reduce the troops too much, and I'm not sure what the minimum number is, the government in Afghanistan conceivably could collapse. And if it does collapse, then I think the likelihood is civil war again inside Afghanistan. That's not good. The Taliban will obviously be very important. They may take over the country again. There is the issue of can terrorists safely base themselves in Afghanistan again? So I would be extraordinarily cautious about moving too rapidly until we make very substantial progress. Getting a ceasefire, I think, is a critical goal.
Mm-hmm. Jim, do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I think so. I think that having a minimum number of troops there will be really required. Actually, from what I understand of what the Biden administration position is, they've always been, Vice President Biden at the time, was very keen about having a counterterrorism approach to Afghanistan. This goes back to the time of the Obama surge in Afghanistan. So I think he's still, and even what I've read lately about some of his statements, suggests that he wants to keep at least a minimum a force level there, both in Afghanistan and Iraq, even as he, wants to draw down, sort of the American presence and to use more reliance on special forces. So I don't think there will be a complete severing of military involvement. I mean, I think the Trump administration has said that they want to get down to like 2,500. I don't know, as Wayne suggested, I don't know what the number would be, and that remains a problem, and it really is a result of what the conditions are on the ground. But I think that there's likely to remain an American presence there.
Yeah. So really what I hear you saying, Jim, is the goal has changed from having an Afghanistan with as close as it can come to a democratic government, but really narrowing the U.S. foreign policy goal to there just to make Afghanistan not a springboard for terrorists that may threaten us. That is the narrow view that you're saying that this administration
not a haven for the growth of terrorism again, and served as kind of a bulwark, if you will, to stop any kind of Taliban expansion, for example.
Okay, let's move on to China. Joe Biden will inherit a fraught relationship with the world's second largest economy, of course, the U.S., the first number one economy in the world. Under Donald Trump, a deterioration in bilateral ties between the U.S. and China, and we've heard comparisons there with the Cold War, in fact. The president placing tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars of products from China, imposing sanctions on Chinese companies, restricting Chinese businesses from buying American technology, all with the aim of forcing Beijing to change its trade practices and perhaps punishment for its authoritarian ways. Wayne, start us off. How would you characterize how Donald Trump has reshaped Sino-U.S. relations?
He has certainly seen the increase in tensions, and it's been particularly over trade and Chinese unfair trade practices, subsidies of industries, stealing of industrial properties, insisting that American companies be linked with Chinese companies. Previous presidents had made that an issue, but Trump's the one who started imposing sanctions to try to get the Chinese to change. And I think Biden will continue this for a while, but I don't think you'll get the rhetoric that of the Trump administration. So that may make things a little bit easier in terms of negotiations. I also think that Biden will want to work with the Chinese in dealing with climate change. And climate change is a bigger problem for the Chinese, maybe a bigger problem than it is for the United States. So maybe we can make some progress in cooperation there.
Okay. Places where there are intersections of conflict, but also cooperation, as you mentioned. Jim, how do you see it here? Trump's really getting tough on China, trying to address these trade practices and also the military expansion in the South China Sea. Biden going at those things, but in a different way, not as a sort of a brusque, a loud voice, but differently?
Yes, I think what the Biden administration will try to do is to make certain that there's a coalition of like-minded states, that is the Western European states, the allies in the Pacific here, to try to urge China to make some reforms and also to sort of more cautious action in the international arena here. I think we've seen already this evidenced in terms of the sort of reinvigoration of the so-called Quad, the Quadrilateral Alliance, in Asia here, getting India, Australia, Japan involved with the United States in terms of serving as a kind of a barrier to Chinese actions here. I think you're also going to see this in terms of the Europeans coming on board. Certainly, NATO and one of the Secretary General's statement of NATO has already made clear about how China is standing, at odds with what the Western nations want to promote here. So I think you're going to see much more coalition politics as the approach to China, rather than the kind of unilateralism oftentimes that the Trump administration utilized.
If you've just joined us, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. It's a Politics Wednesday with an international policy focus on this hour. Let's, as we examine how our foreign policy is likely to be changing under a new president in just over 40 days. Jim, you mentioned NATO there. Let's focus in on that and the shift that's likely to take place in terms of our alliance relations on NATO specifically. Donald Trump made a point of belligerently calling out rich allies in Europe for years. He said they failed to pay their share of NATO spending. Many, in fact, have now increased their contributions. Is this, Wayne, a success then? But at what cost, I guess, is the question as well, because what has happened to the NATO alliance under Trump?
Well, Trump has certainly antagonized many of the individual leaders of NATO countries. And I think that will change dramatically with Biden, who knows most of them and who has an extremely strong commitment to NATO. There will be the benefits. I think they are going to continue to increase their defense expenditures, but I think the whole Biden way of going about it will be to work with them, to cooperate with them, the coalition building thing that Jim was talking about with regard to China as well. I think Biden is strongly committed to rebuilding the transatlantic alliance, which was greatly weakened in the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when we mention NATO, Jim, pick up on this. We have to talk about Russia, the former Soviet Union, many of those republics in the former Soviet Union now a part of NATO. What does Biden's foreign policy mean for NATO, for Russia, and for Russia's president, Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think what it really, really portends is that the United States will reinvigorate the NATO alliance, and that should be a real signal. You know, we have sanctions on Russia now, and, you know, their economy is in very deep trouble here, you know, with oil prices still hovering around 40-some dollars a barrel here, and, you know, that's their sort of their important lifeline here. And I think also that the Biden administration will probably continue not only prodding the Europeans, although rather not so publicly, to spend more on defense. But I think he also will support something that the Obama administration started and that the Trump administration really enhanced in terms of defense spending, something called the European Deterrence Initiative, or originally the European Reassurance Initiative, in which the United States would also rotate some military forces into NATO, and particularly into the Baltic area here, as a signal to Russia. So I think there will be increased pressure on Russia with the Biden administration. I think also there will be, and at least maybe this is a hope on my part, that the Biden administration will put more pressure on Russia to comply, along with the European allies, to comply with the so-called Minsk agreement to try to get a settlement in Ukraine. Ukraine is still unsettled here. Mm-hmm. There is still fighting in the eastern part of Ukraine. And I think it would be important for the Biden administration to not only solidify its support with the European allies, but also to get the European allies to put additional pressure on Russia with regard to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Just over 5 minutes left of our conversation on this Politics Wednesday with Jim McCormick and Wayne Moyer. We talked about China. Let's talk about other parts of Asia, Southeast Asia, our alliance relations there. Of course, a lot of foreign policy interests, allies, Japan, South Korea, Australia, India. Wayne, pick up on when you cast your gaze on that part of the world, what do you see changing?
Well, China is trying to increase its influence in all of these countries, and China would like to do what it can to push America back away from Asia if it could. And so I think what we can expect from the Biden administration is to revitalize our commitments to South Korea, to Japan, to Australia, and to try to strengthen the governments in Southeast Asia who are feeling pressures from China, certainly in terms of the whole South China Sea issue, where they have territorial claims as well as China having territorial claims. So I would look diplomatically for a strong U.S. initiative to strengthen relationships with these countries.
Okay. Jim, your view on Southeast Asia?
Well, I would just add to what Wayne sort of laid out there and maybe suggest what the Biden administration would do with regard to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you know, this economic agreement that was initially negotiated by the Obama administration, and which, of course, almost on day one of Trump taking office, you know, decided to withdraw the United States out of that. My own view was that was a mistake in terms of using some economic leverage with regard to China. And, of course, within the past month or so, there's been this larger regional comprehensive partnership that has been established with Southeast Asian nations economically. So I think the United States and the Biden administration will have to do something in terms of strengthening the economic ties as well as the security relationships within the Asian arena here. I think the other factor that, and maybe, I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about this, is the whole technology factor that plays in, particularly in such a vast open area as Asia and really the Indian Ocean and so on, is what kind of changes will there be in terms of technology that may, you know, really cause the United States to be sort of blinded from being involved in that region of the world, because we're obviously dependent upon, you know, on our naval presence and so on. And if there is new technology developed that sort of could blind the United States' access to the Asian theater, that would be obviously a very great challenge from by the Chinese here.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we just have a couple minutes left of our time for today. So many things we didn't get to in terms of foreign policy, but I wanted to give each of you a minute to perhaps reflect on something not mentioned or emphasize something that was mentioned in closing. With any closing thoughts, as we have devoted this hour to the foreign policy changes on our doorstep with a new president. Wayne, the first minute to you sounds kind of like a debate. It's not. But if I can give you that first minute, and then we'll go to Jim.
Well, I certainly think the climate change emphasis will be very, very important. The next 10 years are going to be critical in terms of whether we deal with the problem. Biden has a strong commitment, but there are so many other issues in the world. And what my concern is that these other issues, many of which will require decisions tomorrow, will postpone action on climate change. And also, to deal with climate change will take very substantial congressional appropriations. And I am very concerned as to whether Biden will be able to get the money that he needs to get his full climate program approved. But I think this is an extraordinarily high priority. We have to take care of COVID first, but climate change in the long run will have just as serious consequences, and we need to take action quickly.
Of course, those runoff Senate elections in Georgia will have a lot to do with how much congressional support future President Biden has. Your closing remarks, Jim McCormick.
Well, I would just add one other factor that we haven't really mentioned, and that is sort of proliferation and non-proliferation issues with regard to nuclear weapons. We mentioned, you know, there's going to be the continuing threat from North Korea that has to be dealt with. And the more immediate factor is, of course, the New START Treaty, which expires here in February of 2021. And it'll be interesting to see how the Biden administration, I suspect what they'll do is temporarily extend the treaty and set out negotiations here that have not been completed by the Trump administration. So non-proliferation as well as climate change, I think, will be another important issue, a maybe dominant kind of issue that the Biden administration will have to address.
Okay, we've run out of time. Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, thank you so much for joining us this hour. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to further analysis of yours in 2021.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.